Selling Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. Now, it's time to go deep for the exclusive info you need on the hockey team you love. This is Preds Insiders with your host, Ryan Porth.
Brought to you by Dr. Kelly Rice.
On your flagship home of the Predators Radio Network, Smashville's best sports talk.
ESPN.
102.5 The Game.
Welcome into this Monday edition of Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game, The Game Nashville app. Ryan Porth here with you. We've got a jam-packed hour of Preds talk here for you. Adam Finkin of The Athletic going to join me here momentarily. Later on in the hour, Greg Wyshynski of ESPN will be joining me as well to go around the NHL, talk about the just disgusting Blackhawks situation that has gone down here in the last week. Joel Quenneville as well, and go around the National Hockey League from a national perspective. So looking forward to Greg Wyshynski joining us here later on this hour. But Adam is standing by. Adam Finkin of The Athletic covers the Predators at a high level for The Athletic. Adam, how are we doing on this Monday evening?
Good, Ryan. How are you?
Doing just fine. I was doing a lot better when I woke up this morning than I have been the rest of the day because of the Derrick Henry news. But, you know, things happen in sports, and, you know, the city will hopefully get over it sooner rather than later. But Saturday afternoon, Adam, the Nashville Predators hosted the New York Islanders. A rare matinee in October. The building was buzzing Saturday. Felt almost like a playoff game in there, especially compared to some of the environments we've seen early this season. And the Predators grind out a 3-2 win over the New York Islanders in a shootout. They come from behind a couple of different times. Tanner Jeannot with a pair of goals. But a big win for the Predators on Saturday to get back to 500 at 4-4.
It was an impressive week for the Predators. They lost four of their first five games, and listening to the players and listening to John Hines, all of them said that they deserved better, that their record was not an accurate representation, I should say, of their overall play. And you saw it by beating Minnesota last weekend, then beating San Jose, and then beating the Islanders on Saturday afternoon. Their goal was to get back to 500 before going out on this six-game road trip that they're about to start tomorrow in Calgary, and they were able to accomplish that goal. And watching that game on Saturday, you know, I feel like you saw, similar to the game against Los Angeles, their first win of the season earlier in the month of October, I think you saw more of the identity that the Predators are going to have to lean on in order to win games. It wasn't a high-scoring affair. It was a 3-2 game in a shootout, but it was a grinded-out, low-scoring, low-event game at various points. It looked like the Predators were going to get goalied by Ilya Sorokin, at least in the first period. He made several quality saves to keep that game scoreless early on when the Predators came out with a lot of energy. But when you look at the overall picture, you know, the Predators, you know, did what they want to do in order to be successful. They kept the Islanders from having too many grade A scoring chances at even strength. UC Saros played very well. They were opportunistic on offense. You think of the goal that tied the game. It was really the likelihood of that goal being scored, you know, percentage wise was probably very low, but Matt Benning makes a centering pass and from a sharp angle, and Tanner Jeannot is standing in front of the net and is able to redirect it into the net. And then Roman Josi clinches it in the shootout. So, you know, if you would have told me at the end of October that the Predators would have been 4-4 after eight games, I probably would have told you that that's about what I expected, maybe slightly better even than I may have anticipated. But they are in a good place heading out on this very long road trip. They're going to play some good teams, starting off against the Calgary Flames, who, if my memory serves, have won six consecutive games. So they will have a tough go right away on this six-game road trip.
You mentioned the second goal scored by Tanner Jeannot. How many times, Adam, have we clamored for the Predators to have someone just park themselves in front of the net to score the greasy, dirty goals? And Janot with the deflection goal there, you mentioned how, you know, the percentages of that puck going in are pretty low. But Tanner Janot is someone who's willing to force his way into the crease area in front of an opposing goaltender, and it showed there. The Predators need more players like that that are going to go into those hard areas and make plays when, you know, in the rest of the game, they're not getting a lot of space to get grade A chances. And Janot did that Saturday, scoring his second goal of the game. And Tanner Janot, this is kind of looking like his breakout season, Adam.
He deserves, you know, high marks for his play so far this season. And it's made me think about the reaction that we all had over the summer when the Predators released their expansion protection list and Tanner Janot was one of three forwards with Philip Forsberg and Luke Cunningham that were protected in the expansion draft. And it raised more than a few eyebrows. But through eight games, I think you're seeing exactly why the Predators felt that Tanner Janot was an important part of their team. To me, more so than any player on the team, Tanner Janot typifies the Predators' identity. He works hard. He hits harder. He gets to those so-called dirty areas in the corners and in front of the net. He does all of the things that the Predators as a team are trying to do. And when you look at their leaderboard in the points department, in the goals department, Tanner Janot leads the team in goals. He has four goals so far this season. And you can look at that a couple of ways. You know, if you're looking at it from, you know, perhaps a more optimistic standpoint, you look at what Tanner Janot is doing. And as I just said, you know, he embodies the Predators' identity. If you're looking at it from a glass half empty standpoint, you're saying, why is this undrafted forward with 20 plus games of experience have more goals than Philip Forsberg or Roman Josi or Ryan Johansson or Matthew Shane? And that's certainly a conversation that can be had. But, you know, Tanner Janot, you know, is really playing well and justifying the Predators' decision, to keep him away from the Seattle Kraken in the expansion draft.
Yeah, Tanner Janot now has 9 goals in 23 career NHL games. So Janot, a diamond in the rough find for David Poile and company for this Predators team, and much needed with all of the different moving parts they've had with either off-season losses or players not playing up to their potential or to their contract. And Janot, 4 goals through 8 games, like you mentioned. You know, I think he's going to score 20 this year. He might knock on the door of 25 if he continues to play this way. And that is certainly impressive for a player that has spent some time in the ECHL here in the last couple of years.
I think 20 goals would be ambitious. You know, I think he, you know, I can't imagine that he is going to score at this rate, over the course of a full season. It's part of his game, but it's not his game, necessarily. So I think if he can get to 15, I think that would be a realistic goal, maybe 15 to 18. I'm not sold yet on 20. Definitely not sold on 25, but I think if he can get to 15 to 18, I think that would be a good season for Tanner for sure.
We might need to make a friendly wager on 20.
Okay, we'll think about it.
Like a gift card or something.
If that's the case, I might not get it for like 6 or 7.
This is Preds Insiders, Ryan Porth, Adam Vigan here with you on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Adam, another positive sign in my eyes with this Predators team is UC Saros, who had a lot of eyeballs on him coming into the season with the fact that Pekarinen retired in the offseason. UC Saros entering the season for the first time as the number one goaltender for this club. And before this season, in his career in October, he's been a slow starter. Before this past month, his Octobers have been very pedestrian with a 3.16 goals against average and a save percentage under 90%, but this October was a lot better for him with a 2.45 goals against, a 9.17 save percentage. He's been dominant on home ice with a 9.38 save percentage. So he just had the one blip on the radar at Winnipeg just a couple weeks ago. So UC Saros, a great start for him. I feel like that is a sign of good things to come for 74 between the pipes.
And speaking of, we were talking about unrealistic, potentially unrealistic expectations for Tanner Janot. You know, speaking of unrealistic expectations, I think coming into this season, UC Saros's play in the second half of last season, you know, perhaps set unrealistic expectations for him. You know, he was not going to be the goaltender that basically saved the regular season last year over the course of a full season. It was highly unlikely. Few goaltenders could maintain that level of play over a full 82-game season. But although UC's numbers are not eye-popping so far this season in terms of his goals against and his save percentage and his fancy stats, you know, he looks incredibly confident in the crease. He's kept the Predators in most of the games. You know, you think about a game, for example, like the loss in Winnipeg. He did allow six goals, but his defense failed him. There was only so much he could do. But I think what this start has reinforced is that UC has all the tools to be a top goaltender in the NHL. And, you know, while he might not have the gaudy numbers he posted, you know, from mid-March through mid-May earlier this year, I think he has shown that he is fully capable of being a true number one goaltender in the NHL. So, as you said, historically, UC Saros tends to get off to slow starts before finding his footing later in the year. That does not seem to be the case so far this year. I've really been impressed with how he's played so far.
I would contend, Adam, that the eye test has been almost identical to what we saw down the stretch last year. I mean,
I think the eye test is, I believe I agree with you. I think the eye test, if you look at his numbers versus the eye test, I do think the eye test has been much kinder to UC. That is, again, that is not to say that his numbers are bad. They're solid, but they're not 1.9 goals against, 940 save percentage, which is what he was doing at the end of last season. But
right.
No, the eye test has been very good to him. You know, the saves he's making, the way he looks in the crease, there haven't been too many goals that you look at where you say, and I hate saying this, he would like to have that one back, because goalies, there are no goals that goalies would want to not give back.
Right.
But there have been few quote unquote bad goals or soft goals, I feel like, so far this year.
So UC Saros, I would say Saturday was one of those games where he kept them in it with the Islanders in the lead for most of that game before Janot tied it at two apiece in the third period there. That game ended up going to a shootout. The Predators win. Adam, there is a rule change that I would like to see made with the shootout. I believe we have been over this before in seasons past. And in this instance, it actually would have hurt the Predators on Saturday. In years past, I can think of a couple of different scenarios where it would have helped the Predators on Saturday. But if a player commits a penalty at the end of overtime, I do not believe he should be allowed to partake in the shootout. And Philip Forsberg committed a hook on Matthew Barzal in the waning seconds of overtime, and the ref had his hand up. It was going to be a penalty, and since it's the end of overtime, that penalty gets washed. Forsberg goes out there and scores the goal in overtime, or in the shootout, I should say, before Roman Josi seals it with the second goal of the shootout. But Adam, that is a rule that I would like to see changed in the shootout. Again, it would have hurt the Preds on Saturday. It all evens out at the end of the day, but I would like to see the NHL change that rule to say, if you commit a penalty at the end of overtime, you should not be allowed to partake in the shootout. Your thoughts?
I think that's a fair rule. It's much better than my rule, which I was trying to get people on board with during the game, where if a player commits a penalty, if a player draws a penalty at the end of overtime, that player should get two cracks in the shootout. So Barzal could have had an extra shot for Barzal. That, you know, I don't think anyone was on my side on that one. So I think your rule is fair. I think since, you know, it's to, in order to stop players from just taking penalties they know won't cost them. I think it's a sound idea. I think, you know, Philip Forsberg, not having Philip Forsberg in the shootout, you know, can make a big difference. So I've got no problem with that. I mean, if the NHL were to do that, I would not disagree.
Yeah, currently there's no consequence for a player who commits a penalty within the last 2 minutes of overtime if the game goes to a shootout. So just something I would like to see change. I know Preds fans today won't agree with me, but maybe next Monday if something like this happens, you know, where the Predators see a star player that they are playing against have the same thing happen and they lose in a shootout because that player scored, then maybe they'll agree. Adam, on the other side, we're going to hear some grades from you for three forwards for the Nashville Predators. And we'll look big picture with this team as we are now 1 month in to this new season in the National Hockey League. The Preds are 4-4 after 8 games after they win in the shootout against the New York Islanders on Saturday by a score of 3-2. They are now 4-4 after 3 straight wins to close out the month of October. They head out on a big road trip here to start the month of November. But on the other side, grades for the first 8 games from Adam Vingan. That's next. He's Adam Vingan. I'm Ryan Porth. You're listening to Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Preds Insiders rolls right along here on ESPN 102.5 The Game and the Game Nashville app. Ryan Porth joined by Adam Vingan of The Athletic here this evening talking Predators. Greg Wyshynski of ESPN is in the on-deck circle. We'll go around the league with him. Adam, the Preds win 3-2 in a shootout on Saturday. The call you heard there coming back from break from Pete Weber as the Preds move to 4-4 after 3 straight victories to close out the month of November. And I want to get grades from 3 players from you, Adam, on their first 8 games compared to expectations, okay? So sure. Let's look at 3 different forwards on this team. Let's start with the player that has been under the biggest microscope in the last couple of years for this club, and that's Matt Duchene. Matt Duchene for the Nashville Predators. Adam, how would you grade his first 8 games of the year where he has 5 points in those 8 games?
I'm going to give Matt an A-. I've been really impressed by how he's played so far this season. I would contend, and you can tell me if I'm exaggerating, because as you know, I am prone to exaggeration.
No.
I believe that Matt Duchene has been more engaged and more noticeable in these 8 games than he was at any point last season. And
I would agree with that.
And part of last season, he missed a significant period of time. I think he missed 6 or 7 weeks with an injury. So he only played, I think, 34, 35 of 56 games. But you can tell when he's on the ice. I mean, he's getting some great chances. He's forechecking hard. You know, the one thing that I think we talked about at the end of the season was whether or not Matt would fully embrace John Hines' vision for the Predators. And there was plenty of reason to be skeptical after last season. But I think based on what I've seen from him through 8 games, it really does feel like the Matt Duchene that Predators fans lusted after for years. I think you're seeing a renewed purpose from him that was clearly missing last season. So I will give Matt an A- through 8 games. I have been pleasantly surprised by what I've seen from him.
The goal that he scored to lead off the game against San Jose last Tuesday night, power play goal, early in the game, that was a shot that he scored on where I sat back and asked myself, why don't we see that more out of him?
We did see a lot of that out of him before he signed with the Predators.
Right.
I mean, that's his game, his ability to enter the zone with possession and create offense. And we saw that on that goal in particular. He did it, basically did it by himself. And you want to see more of that from Matt. That's sort of what I was talking about. Like those plays last year were non-existent or very, very rare. So to see him looking more like the Matt Duchene that's had success in the NHL for the last 10 plus years, I think that's a positive sign. Of course, we'll have to see what happens if and when he hits a slump. and see what happens when times get tough for him personally. But I think as a Predators fan, you can feel good about what you've seen from Matt in eight games.
All right, so Adam Finkan gives Matt Duchene an A- through the first eight games of this young season. The next forward that we're going to give a grade to, Adam, is Eli Tolvanen. Eli Tolvanen has one goal through eight games. That one goal came approximately 10 seconds into the season, it felt like. And we have not seen him get back on the score sheet ever since. He had a couple chances on Saturday, including a golden one in overtime that Ilya Sorokin stopped on Tolvanen in overtime. So, Adam, through eight games, how would you grade Eli Tolvanen?
Not as well as I would grade Matt. I might give Eli, I'm going to give him a D plus. Other than that first goal, which was the first goal of the season for the Predators in their opener against the Kraken, he minus a couple chances here and there, like the one you just referenced, you know, he's been invisible to me. I feel like he really has not made any sort of impact, especially where the Predators know he can. On the power play. And when you, there are Predators fans who have asked me on social media why Eli Tolvanen has been relegated to the second power play unit. You know, that's an interesting question. The top unit has been loaded with veterans, Roman Josi, Matt Duchene, Ryan Johansson, Philip Forsberg, and Mikael Granlund. The second unit skews a bit younger. But, you know, Tolvanen, I just feel like he hasn't really been there. And it's a bit concerning. It's basically the opposite of Matt Duchene, where you felt like you noticed Eli Tolvanen a lot more last season than you are this season. So he's got a lot of room to grow. I'm a harsh grader. I'm giving him a D plus.
Okay. I think this start is a little concerning. I don't want to jump to any conclusions yet. You know, he had a good first half of last season when he was featured on the first power play unit, and that was before his injury later in the season. He had 11 goals in 40 games, 22 points overall. 1 point in eight games from Tolvanen. I don't want to start really getting concerned about that until probably a month from now. Let's see what he does here in November. But it's a little concerning that you're only getting 1 point out of a player that is – obviously a key part of this puzzle, not only this season, but moving forward. He's only 22, so there will be some growing pains no matter what, but I am getting pretty concerned with it.
Yeah, you know, where we saw Eli make the biggest strides last year was in his play away from the puck, and perhaps I'm not looking for that as much because I'm looking at the point total, which might be my own fault, but I just feel like the impact has not been there, just based on the eye test, not been there anywhere near as much as it was, you know, in the middle of last season where he was basically carrying the team when things were going south. So, like I said, if Eli were in my class, I'd be having a parent-teacher conference. Mm. I'm giving him a D, like I said, D plus, but plenty of time to improve that grade.
How would you grade Phil Tomasino's first blush in the NHL, where he has played six games, he has scored two goals, he's had some highs, some lows, but for the rookie that everyone has been anticipating to break into the NHL, how would you grade Tomasino in October?
I think I'd give him a B. You know, I think he's been pretty solid. You know, we saw the goal he scored against the Rangers. Talk about low percentage shots, bank shot from below the goal line. But to me, the more important thing that happened in that game was the play that Phillip made that led to the goal against, the game-winning goal against by the Rangers. You know, he takes the puck out of the zone and he's looking for Tommy Novak in the neutral zone. And he makes an ill-advised pass that's picked off by, of all people, Norris Trophy-winning defenseman Adam Fox, who knows exactly what to do with it. The rush that he, Sammy Blais, and Alex Lafreniere had to score the goal, beautiful, beautiful play. After the game, Tomasino took full blame for that particular play. Perhaps he didn't need to do that, but it's plays like that. That's why it's important for players like Phillip, among the other young players on the lineup, to be in this game, to play a lot of the games this season, because now Philip Tomasino is going to have that same opportunity in a game in the future. He may have already had it, and I can't recall. But he's going to have a play in a game where he's going to see a pass like that, and he's going to think twice about making it because of what happened against the Rangers. And that's learning. That's a teachable moment. So, yes, you see the offensive instincts. He looks like he's going to be a reliable top six player one day once he refines his game. He's going to make some mistakes, but that's important. So I would give him a B. He hasn't blown us away. You know, I think he's played the way that a 20-year-old rookie should be playing. So I'll give him a solid B.
You're listening to Preds Insiders here on ESPN 102.5 The Game and the Game National app. Ryan Porth, Adam Vingan here with you on this Monday evening. Adam, big road trip coming up for the Nashville Predators, where they will play the next six games away from Bridgestone Arena. At Calgary tomorrow night, pregame starting at 7. At Edmonton Wednesday night, pregame starting at 6:30. And then Friday night in Vancouver, that is the Western Canadian road trip. And then they will be in Chicago next Sunday night. I made a bold prediction with Darren McFarland last Monday, saying that Jeremy Colleton would not be the head coach of those Chicago Blackhawks by the time the Preds played them. They still have not won a game. They are 0-7-2. Who knows what will happen with Colleton? He's probably bought himself a little bit more time with all the off-ice stuff going on with that organization, and we'll get into that a lot more with ESPN's Greg Wyshynski here in the next segment. But Adam, looking ahead to this road trip, what is the one thing that you want to see out of this Preds team?
Well, the one thing I want to see, and I'm looking at the first two games of this road trip, they're at Calgary and at Edmonton. It's a back-to-back situation, which is always difficult, but they're playing two teams that have a combined record of, let me do my quick math here, 12-2-1.
Good job.
Calgary is 6-1-1. They've won six consecutive games. Edmonton is 6-1. These are some tough games right off the hop. And it's, like I said, back-to-back situation. I'm looking to see how they respond. Look, they played really well against some good teams over the past week. You know, Minnesota, I believe, was undefeated. When the Predators beat them, the Sharks had gotten off to a good start. When the Predators beat them, the Islanders, a solid team, they're 3-2-2 on the year, but a team that many expect to be among the top contenders in the Eastern Conference when the Predators beat them. So, you know, perhaps the Predators have been punching above their weight a little bit over the past week. And I think it would tell us really where this team stacks up if they can beat two very hot teams to start the season. So I'm looking at these first two games in particular, because they play Vancouver later in the week. The Canucks have not had a good start to the season. You mentioned everything that's happening in Chicago. Next week, they play a back-to-back in Dallas and St. Louis. But I'm looking at these two games in particular against Calgary and Edmonton, two of the top teams so far in the first month of the season, on the road to see how what the Predators have been doing over the past week is sustainable.
A nice early season test these next six road games for the Nashville Predators. Adam, before we let you go, there is a piece of news on Saturday that was a surprise to a lot of people I know. Terry Crisp announcing that the end of this season, he's going to be walking away from the TV booth. He's been paired up with Lindsay Rowley at the desk for pre- and post-game and intermissions for the last handful of seasons. He spent number of years as Pete Weber's color guy in the booth on TV. But Terry Crisp going to be retiring at the end of the season. It will be the end of an era for Predators coverage. Terry Crisp was a vital part of launching the sport of hockey in this town, along with Pete Weber. Those two taught many people all across this region the sport of hockey. And Terry Crisp, I would contend, could always run for the mayor of Smashville, the mayor of Nashville, and win that race. Tough to see that news on Saturday, but obviously wants to spend a lot more time with his family, rightfully so. So Crispy announcing Saturday that at the end of the season, he will be walking away and retiring.
Yeah, it was sad news for a lot of Predators fans. Yeah, I think you said it eloquently that Terry and Pete, have played an integral role in the development of the interest of hockey in this region. Talking to lifelong Predators fans who started with the team in the late 90s, you know, their earliest memories of, are of listening to Pete and Terry and learning the game of hockey through Pete and Terry. They've been great ambassadors for the organization and in the community. And Terry is just a wonderful person. I've never seen him in a bad mood. I don't think I would want to see him in a bad mood based on the stories I've heard of him as a coach. But he's always in a great mood. Always great to talk to him. Always puts a smile on your face. I thought it was well-deserved when they made the announcement in the arena early in the game. He was on the band stage, I believe, and he received a standing ovation. Like I said, much deserved. It won't be the same without Crispy on the broadcast, but you know, the organization and its fan base is forever indebted to Terry for the strides that, you know, for the strides that this team and this organization has made because of him. So, you know, it's not quite over yet. We still have a full season of Crispy to go.
Yep.
But you'll certainly appreciate everything he says on the broadcast more so knowing that once the season ends, he won't be there anymore.
Man, Pecorine retiring this past off season, Terry Crisp retiring next off season. I mean, times are changing here with the Nashville Predators. So Adam, well said. Thank you so much as always for your time here on Preds Insiders, and we'll talk to you again soon.
All right, Ryan, thanks for having me.
All right, that was Adam Vinken from The Athletic. In the on-deck circle, it is ESPN's Greg Wyshynski. He'll join me next to go around the league, including the awful situation going on with the Chicago Blackhawks organization here in the last 7 days. That's all coming up next here on Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into Preds Insiders here on ESPN 102.5 The Game and The Game Nashville app. Ryan Porth here with you and been teasing it all show long. ESPN's Greg Wyshynski is here with me here to talk about this Chicago Blackhawks sexual assault investigation. And Greg, thank you so much for joining me here. And I can't recall a sadder week for hockey than these past 7 days. And the timeline of last Tuesday, the results come out of the investigation for sexual assault by the video coach occurring in May of 2010. GM Stan Bowman resigns, among some other front office changes for the Chicago Blackhawks. The next day, it becomes public that John Doe in that investigation was, in fact, Kyle Beach, former Blackhawks prospect, who did a heart-wrenching interview that night with TSN. Jonathan Toews and Patrick Kane had comments after the Hawks game that night against Toronto. Those comments were hard to stomach. Same night, Joel Quenneville coaches for the Florida Panthers. He does not meet with the media after the game. There's the awkward Bill Zito press conference in place of Joel Quenneville. Then the next day, Joel Quenneville is out. Today, just reading the live tweets coming through, not only from you, but others around the hockey world from the press conference for Gary Bettman and Bill Daly, that seemed to be pretty embarrassing for the league. I mean, how would you sum up these last 7 days for the league, Greg?
Well, I mean, I think the word reckoning would be a good word to use in a lot of places. I mean, obviously in Chicago with the fact that Stan Bowman and Al McIsaac, another player personnel person, resigned, the fact that in Florida, Joel Quenneville had to do the same. And I had the National Hockey League kind of defending its own reaction to the investigation and the scandal. And you know, in some places, I think the NHL has done a decent job at explaining itself. Like, for example, the decision not to suspend Kevin Cheveldayoff, the general manager of the Winnipeg Jets. I know a lot of people are up in arms about him having taken part in a meeting about the allegations from Kyle Beach and not really having done anything. I agree with the NHL that I don't think an assistant general manager at that time is in a position of power to really affect things. Sure, I think he could feel pretty bad about himself having not followed up after a few weeks to find out why Brad Aldrich, the video coach, was still on staff. But I don't think that he's in the same position as Joel Quenneville or Stan Bowman or the former president of the team, John McDonough, to really have affected change. But when it comes to some of the other things, like the $2 million fine handed to the Blackhawks that pales in comparison to what the league gave the Arizona Coyotes for violating a draft combine rule, or the New Jersey Devils for violating the salary cap, that's a hard one to explain. And the other thing, too, is I found Bettman's answer about Joel Quenneville being able to coach the Florida Panthers on the day before he was to meet with Bettman in New York to be completely unsatisfactory. His whole thing was, I didn't want Joel Quenneville to feel like he was being prejudged. I'm sorry, but aren't players constantly suspended indefinitely pending a hearing all the time in this league? I mean, that is by far, I thought, his worst answer in his press conference today. But, you know, all over the league, we're coming to grips with how teams and individuals in the league reacted to this investigation into this scandal. And hopefully everybody comes out the better for it.
Greg, I think the most disheartening thing for me in the last 7 days is not only learning of all the individuals that looked the other way back in May of 2010 and said, you know, we're just going to focus on hockey. This isn't, essentially saying this isn't as important as trying to win a Stanley Cup. But it's also the comments coming from, say, Jonathan Toews or Joel Quenneville or Patrick Kane or even Stan Bowman in a statement that are essentially pointing fingers at other people. And it doesn't feel like there's enough responsibility being taken by the individuals that were in the heart of this back in May of 2010. Would you agree?
Sure. And you know, that extends to the league too. I mean, you know, it was asked today, when did you first know about these allegations made by Beach towards the Blackhawks? And they said that they were given the heads up that there could be a civil lawsuit potentially filed last December. Well, then they said they got the details of the suit in May. And so that's 5 months, right? And their reaction to that is, well, what did you want us to do? The Blackhawks told us that there was not going to be any merit to the civil lawsuit to ending any pending litigation. And so they took the team's word for it instead of being proactive about it. I can't imagine that's going to happen the next time something like this comes down the pike. But you're right overall. I mean, it is a lot of buck passing. In Stan Bowman's case, his statement after he resigned was basically saying this is all John McDonough's fault.
Yep.
The players part of this is tricky for me because, I mean, for a lot of these guys, it does seem like it was all living in the world of rumor and innuendo. In the case of Kane and Toews, look, Toews' comments were completely tone deaf and really disappointing for a lot of us that hold up Jonathan Toews as being one of the more enlightened players in this league. But I mean, a guy like Patrick Kane lived with Stan Bowman. Toews has been with Bowman for over a decade. They obviously have a real tight relationship with the guy. I can kind of understand the reaction to what's gone down and feeling that maybe your guy got a raw deal, but you certainly don't have to put that in the public discourse and try to publicly defend somebody who just had to resign in shame.
Greg Wyshynski of ESPN on the line with us here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. We've hit on it briefly, but the press conference today with Gary Bettman, Bill Daly, and the NHL, how would you just summarize that event for the NHL and how they came across to everybody who was on that media call?
Well, they were trying to push this thing forward a little bit. You know, Bettman has now publicly stated that he's apologized to Beach and his family for what he went through in 2010 and being let down by, you know, several different entities. And, you know, the NHL tried to push it forward by saying that they're going to create a network of player assistance organizations and programs that will be available to hockey players around the world, not simply just NHL players, because there is sort of this weird nebulous thing that at least one veteran NHL player told me over the weekend of Beach having been not necessarily an NHL player. I mean, he was a minor leaguer that was a black ace reserve player for the Blackhawks in the playoffs. And what was the NHLPA's situation in all of this, for example? There was some confusion there. And then, you know, Bettman offered counseling services to Beach and his family. So there was an effort in trying to push it forward a little bit and also trying to lay down the law to say that the fine that he gave the Blackhawks was to ensure that other teams get the message that they've got to be more responsible for what happens inside their own organizations for inappropriate contact. But as far as how the league came off today, it was a tough look, man. I'm not going to lie to you. Like, some of the decisions they made, I think, were not really defended well. The inaction of the league when these allegations came to light is tough to defend as well. But for the most part, you know, you have to remember that it's like 32 separate businesses, right? And I think the NHL, in their defense, did expect that the Blackhawks were taking the Blackhawks at their word on this until they no longer could. But And I'll say this about the NHL, too. I asked Bettman if he had laid out a framework or at least had given Joel Quenneville an idea of what his punishment would be if he didn't resign. And he didn't confirm or deny that he had done that, but you can kind of read between the lines and see that Joel Quenneville, at the very least, was informed of what his fate could be, I think, before he went ahead and handed in his resignation.
Do you feel like Joel Quenneville or Stan Bowman will work in the NHL again?
Of course they will. This is the NHL. You know, the number of people that have been ostracized from this league for their decisions. I mean, I fully expect Mike Babcock to coach again. I think the difference here is that in both cases, there is going to have to be some discipline served and some time served if they do want to work in the league again. I think Bettman was clear about that with Quenneville in his statement after they met, that if Quenneville wants to coach again, he's going to have to kind of reapply to the league and see if there's anything subsequent that he's going to have to deal with. And I think in Bowman's case, it'd probably be the same thing. But look, you know, there's been a lot of buck passing here, right? And I think in both of these guys' cases, they've tried to do what they can to blame it on other people. And you know, maybe with the right combination of time served and the right PR campaign and obviously the right market hiring them, there can be a return to the NHL for both of them. It wouldn't shock me. I mean, this is part of hockey culture that we all have to deal with, is that, you know, people that shouldn't necessarily get a second chance always seem to get a second chance.
In your mind, Greg, what does the NHL need to do with Kyle Beach to make sure that moving forward, something like this doesn't happen again within their league?
Well, like Bettman said, you know, one of the things the league insisted on with the Blackhawks investigation was that it would be handled by an independent entity. In this case, a law firm called Jenner and Block that did this investigation and released the report last week. And I know myself and a lot of people were very skeptical about this because the Blackhawks were the ones who, you know, hired the firm to do the investigation. Well, it turns out the investigation was pretty thorough, and the allegations that were made were checked out, and people lost their jobs, and there were repercussions because the report was as vivid and relentless as it was. So I think the lesson learned here for the NHL as it tries to reckon with what it should do next is don't be insular. You know, have people from outside the process come in and try to do more to affect change in your own policies and provide oversight and say, hey, this process that's been in place for 20 years isn't satisfactory, and there's no way to check and balance individuals if they don't report things. You know, there are ways to go about this that I think are good ways to go about it if Bettman follows through, because he mentioned this today in his press conference. If he follows through and says, hey, you know, we're going to bring in outside organizations and stuff to help us, you know, figure out a way forward. I think it's essential. And I think it's essential in Chicago, too. Like, they've been trying to figure out, you know, who the sheriff in town is going to be to come in and be their next president of hockey operations. Maybe it's the same person who's their GM. Maybe it's a separate person. Think outside the box, man. Don't just hire an alumnus or hire somebody who's been kicked around the GM jobs in this league for the last, you know, 15 years. Hire somebody that can bring a fresh perspective to the organization that's not only going to be able to look at your processes and say, here's how we prevent another Kyle Beach situation from happening, but also to look at the totality of the team and say, hey, here's how we have to change the culture here. If we change the logo, if we change the name, if we do XYZ, bring somebody from the outside in to do that, not only for the Blackhawks, but for the NHL.
Greg Wyshynski of ESPN here with us on Preds Insiders. Greg, tough to transition from that topic to another topic, but, you know, today is the first day of November, which means October is in the books, and October marked the return of hockey to the ESPN platform, not only on ESPN or ESPN2, but ESPN Plus as well, with so much content. What's kind of the general sense of feedback that you've been getting and your team's been getting about the additional NHL coverage and the return of games to your network?
Well, first of all, I thought you handled the transition well as somebody who hosts a podcast and had to do advertising transition during the Kyle Beach coverage. Let me tell you, you did fine.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
on the awkward scale. It's been exhilarating, man. Like, not only the first inklings of it when people, you know, gave so much joyful nostalgia towards us about ESPN getting the games back, but just the reaction to the coverage has been great. I mean, the games look amazing. The availability of over 1,000 games on ESPN Plus, I think, is something people really dig, especially when, you know, you can bundle it up and you know, grab your Baby Yoda and NHL hockey for one big price. It's a pretty cool deal. And then on top of that, I mean, like, it's the simplest thing for fans in the U.S., but it becomes an extraordinarily big leap when we haven't had it for so long, in the sense that, you know, there's so much ancillary programming to go along with the games. You know, The Point, our Thursday show that I was a part of last week with John Tortorella and John Buccigrass. In the Crease, our nightly highlight show that's on ESPN Plus. Like, there's a bunch of other stuff just swirling around for hockey fans to consume beyond the games. And you know, no shade at who used to have the rights, but it just wasn't there, you know, for the longest time. And I think that we really put in the effort to sort of expand the coverage universe beyond just turning on a game and watching it on a weeknight.
Yeah, as someone who had an ESPN Plus subscription before all of this, I am certainly thrilled that now I essentially have what NHL TV was with that subscription and can watch all the hockey that I want off of ESPN Plus. It's fantastic.
Well, and it's cheaper too. I mean, look, yeah. I know we're getting into like infomercial territory here, but like it's a heck of a lot cheaper than for what a lot of us paid to grab all those games. But again, for me, the coolest part is not only the stuff that we've been able to do, but the fact that there is also another network with Turner doing what they do. And you know, having multiple networks is what big boy sports have in the U.S. You know, it's like football, basketball, baseball, all on different networks. And now hockey's in the same space, and we'll make them better and they'll make us better. And it's all just great for hockey fans.
Yeah, the ESPN-TNT combo has, at least for me, been a breath of fresh air for NHL coverage compared to what it used to be. Greg Wyshynski of ESPN has been our guest here with this infomercial on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Greg, thanks as always for your time.
Anytime. Thanks for having me.
That was Greg Wyshynski of ESPN talking about the Chicago Blackhawks sexual assault investigation that came out last week. And look, it's a Predator show, but it's also a hockey show. And this has been the biggest topic in the sport of hockey for the last 7 days. Not an easy one, not a fun one by any means, really a disheartening and disgusting one when you dive into all the details. But it's an important topic to discuss, and I'm glad Greg could carve out a few minutes of his time today, and really hope the NHL can move forward and not have these comments that come out that are just so tone deaf, or players who were involved in that situation, those comments being so tone deaf. I don't know exactly how you can recover from what has happened in the last 7 days, but hopefully everybody can move forward and also not forget what happened and make sure that it does not happen again to another player down the road like it did to Kyle Beach. Thanks again for listening to Preds Insiders here this evening. Thanks to Adam Vingan earlier in the hour for joining me, and Greg Wyshynski here this segment with ESPN. Preds Insiders is brought to you every week by Dr. Kelly Rice. For all your dental or sleep apnea needs, visit kellyerice.com. We'll be back with you next Monday at 6 p.m. with Preds Insiders right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.